Good afternoon and welcome to Boldness on 3CR 855 AM. The Boldness is a disability-led radio program talking about lived experience of disability, and I am your host today. My name is Raf. Today we have got the absolute pleasure talking with Kalida Sari, who is an independent artist from Perth. She's set to release her new single, I Survive, which is a powerful reflection on resilience shaped by a life-threatening medical experience. We're in for an absolute treat, and there's a special giveaway. As a big hint, a long time ago, Kalida did win the Grace Darling Hotel Songwriting Competition. Hello, Kalida. How are you feeling there?
Hello. I'm feeling great, thanks. How are you?
Oh, look, we've had a good time. Listeners, Kalida and myself have been in a bit of a chat beforehand, talking about the interview. Kalida, look, essentially you're a musician with life experiences. How about you tell us a little about your life and your musical influences?
Well, I grew up in Perth along the Swan River. It was kind of a almost semi-rural kind of childhood, but we're only 20 minutes from the actual centre of Perth. But that was Perth back then. I grew up listening to my parents' records. My dad had the most fantastic record collection. He used to have like a whole wall full of vinyls, and it was everything from like the most experimental jazz to country to pop music and classical and everything else in between. And I developed a love for country and folk music and pop music from those records from a very early age, and just sang along to them to enjoy them, and then realised after a few years, I think I can actually sing. So started learning some instruments when I was younger. I think I learned guitar at 11 or 12 and piano at about 10. And singing lessons when I went into high school.
And so, like, when you had reached that good old age of sweet 16, what happened then? You started performing then. What were your experiences like performing as a 16-year-old in the music scene? What was that like?
Well, it was kind of a bit terrifying. You had to learn very quickly to be comfortable with a completely male-dominated environment. It was a bit tough. There weren't many opportunities for female musicians back then. I stuck it out. But it was back then, Perth was mainly just would only really have gigs for all male bands that were like either grunge or kind of indie kind of rock bands. So being a young female folk singer was not the easiest thing to get gigs with, but I got a few gigs, and luckily I looked older than I was, so I could get into the pubs to actually perform.
Yeah, well, look, you said I can go back to the 1980s. I identify as one of the dinosaurs that are still living. I remember when fake IDs started when you were about 15, 16 or so. This is back.
Oh, yeah.
This is back in the 1980s.
Yeah.
So, but that kind of like is that. This is kind of like one of the, Kalida, from a musical perspective, is that, okay, it's a male dictated the industry, especially in Perth, as you're starting off as a 16-year-old? What did you encounter, let's say, sexism or discrimination, or do you think it was more difficult because of being female and being young?
Oh, incredibly difficult. I think it's, God, there's so much, there's so many Me Too stories I have that I've forgotten about them, most of them. And it was unfortunately just par for the course back then. As a female musician, you know, we'd all share stories of, you know, the creepy guys that you'd have to go into the recording studios with. That was the only way you could get a demo done, or, you know, the kind of the creepy older guys at the bars and stuff waiting for you to come off stage and being inappropriate. And yeah, there was definitely an incredible amount of sexism, and there still is in the music industry. I mean, what are we, like 23%, I think, of the music industry? So it was just worse back then. And it seemed like it was going to be an uphill slog, and it really was. There are a lot of situations that I really would die to know if my daughter ever got into those situations myself. So I hope things have changed a little bit, but we've still got so far to come. We really do. And back then, I didn't know I was disabled, but that definitely didn't help things. And there's still, like, when, you know, you ask industry professionals about how to get ahead, there's still this kind of old school idea of, like, you know, going to gigs and trying to meet the right people and schmoozing and stuff like that. And as an autistic ADHDer, that is virtually impossible for me. I don't know how to schmooze. I do it very badly, and it's like, it's really backfired quite a few times.
Well, they're kind of like, I don't think it's backfired, because look, as much as what you think you might, it could have backfired really badly. But look, let's look at the up and the bright side of it, is that you probably started off and you actually got a bit of a kick, like you worked hard and you got a bit of talent there. Like, for example, like winning the Grace Darling Award. But before that, is that you had a song that was included on a local compilation album, and it was called I Need More. This is rock and roll at its best. at its best, eh?
And when, little folk song, so rock and roll.
And kind of like, so you, I reckon you kind of like, so basically you sort of like, it's tough, you survived a bit, and we're going to get into this a little bit later on. And then you came up with this other excellent title. I just want to listen to these songs from the titles. Envious Eyes?
Yep.
Tell us about Envious Eyes.
Oh, Envious Eyes. That was, again, before I knew that I was autistic or ADHD. It was more kind of about looking at the world through a lens of wishing I had more, wishing, you know, I didn't have mental illness, that life wasn't, I didn't live in a patriarchy, you know, like, but it was kind of like an angsty teenage song about just being sad and depressed and like just nobody really kind of seeing the world the way that I saw the world. Now I know that it's probably also to do with the fact that I was autistic and ADHD, so I saw the world very differently to everyone else. Yeah.
Yeah, but would you describe that as a waste of time?
Did <Diddle-tsh. laughs> Definitely not. Every song is a learning experience, and every life experience is a learning experience. And great material for songs. There's nothing better than a bit of trauma to get the creative juices flowing.
Yeah, look, and sort of like you've been as part of this going through chasing ambition, putting it all out there, part of your life journey, you came across to Melbourne and what happened?
Well, I came over to pursue acting and music. And I was very, very naive and full of hope and thought I was going to conquer the world. I think I tried to do too much. I think I bit too much off.
Yeah, it's a common autistic
And
trait, I'd reckon, based on my
yeah.
experience of autism.
Yeah, it was. I really, yeah, I tried to do everything. I tried to do three different professions and, some night school and, and a day job. So it, the acting kind of slowly took off, but I got a bit disillusioned with the industry and kind of, realized eventually that I would always really be wondering how to pay my rent, and I didn't want to spend my whole life like that. So I kind of, but I did hit autistic burnout numerous times. I just didn't have a word for it because I didn't know I was autistic. So I kind of, I think the disillusionment was intertwined with the burnout. So I did actually have some success, but I couldn't continue on with it. Spent
Oh, yeah, so you actually did this little thing of chasing success, like it's called burnout. So what
yeah.
happens when you burn out and you're creative? Well, you go to London, don't you?
Yes, to have a nice little time to chill out. Because London's a perfect place to do some recovery and have a relaxing I'd fallen in love with an English boy, and he lost his sponsorship visa, so I was really burnt out, and the thought of an adventure sounded really exciting, and a break from just constantly grinding away, trying to get acting and music work. It was, I was exhausted. Went to London for a bit and realized pretty quickly that I didn't want to spend the rest of my life doing unqualified jobs anymore, because it was really hard, and I was sick of, being treated badly, basically, in those jobs. So I decided to come back and finish my first degree, so I wouldn't
And
have to work in unqualified jobs.
what was that first degree?
It was arts in majoring in it, the first one was theatre arts and film and television, and I changed decided to change my major in the last year to journalism, because I loved writing, and I thought I could maybe make something of that. So then I burnt out again.
Well, look, so we can tell that you loved writing, and well, as I reckon, I can tell that pretty easily because, look, and you also won the Step Up Song Competition back in around 2005, and you had another song. I'm going to use that horrible word doing interviews. You're allowed to say that's not fair, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's kind of like, do you reckon the experiences have inspired you? I mean, songs like Lamental was included in a local compilation called Rocky Blues the same year.
Yeah.
That horrible word, inspirational, if you've got a disability.
I know. I mean, I sometimes do forget that I did actually get some success, and I did actually get some songs onto compilation CDs and stuff before I even really understood how the industry worked. And I was quite lucky. I didn't actually see any actual money from it.
But you got exposure, though.
I got a bit of exposure. It was still quite a slog back in 2004, 2005 when I came back to Perth. There were still very few acoustic nights and any very few places that would actually play folk music. I mean, the only really way that you could make any money from being a female soloist back then even was if you could play 3 hours straight, and most of it was cover music, and in a wine bar or something.
I've got a saying about people about cover music. Granted that anyone who can play music, including cover music, they've got to have some talent there. But look, I have been known to describe cover music, it's the bubblegum microwave approach to becoming a nobody, seriously. I'm kind of like, I like the original stuff, and that's why some of these songs which you've actually written, like Wasting Time and I Survived, at least they're more authentic about what you're going. And they sound pretty groovy, don't they? Because you survived quite a lot here. You survived the music industry as a younger person, which wasn't that long ago, enough to go overseas to chase the experiences over in London and get an arts degree, right? And then you've also had a bit of a break because, like, things can get very, very tough. And then you came back in 2023. Do you reckon that how do you think having creative interests such as music and performing, how does that assist or basically benefit the fact that there's a disability somewhere? Is it actually an advantage, or does it help you, and does it help make sense of your world?
Yes. I mean, obviously being disabled in any capacity is very challenging. But once you actually have a diagnosis and have a name to what you're experiencing and understanding why you see the world the way you do and why you've struggled so much, that in itself is like absolutely life-changing. Once you get those diagnoses and you can actually understand yourself a lot better. But having an autistic and an ADHD brain makes you an incredibly creative person anyway. And I think finally getting my diagnosis quite late in life, I only got diagnosed in my 40s. So once I actually understood what was going on, it was like the floodgates just kind of opened up back up, and they'd been shut for so long because I'd just been in survival mode for 20 years. I just kind of went from burnout to burnout to burnout, just trying to earn a living and going from illness to illness. And so once I had that understanding of what I'd been through, I was like, oh, wow, I've actually survived an incredible experience, like a really tough experience. And giving myself that kind of pat on the back and acknowledging how hard it was and all the hurdles I'd actually overcome without even knowing what was going on was incredible.
Yeah, well, we're sadly, very, very fast running out of time. And you have written and released a single, I Survived. And to make sure that you can actually listen to it, I tell you what, how about, I bet someone who's as famous as you are, Kalita, and you're being famous because you won some of these competitions, how about if we've got Radiothon coming up, we're going to save the songs to be played at Radiothon, like I Survived, and that's not, you're not wasting time doing stuff like that. But we're going to get a couple. Well, is that, Lydia? I hope I got that right.
It's okay. It's Kalita.
There you go, listeners. I said, look, I sometimes actually get my phonetic pronunciations incorrect. Lydia, I think I did it again. But what's the best way for people to find out more about how to get it, listen to your music, or more importantly, maybe buy your music? Have you got a website?
Yes, it's kalitasari.com. And I try and keep that information on there as up to date as possible. But all of my music is on pretty much all of the regular providers. Bandcamp is the best one to buy music from because the artists get the biggest amount of money back from their music. But every other streaming service I'm on, basically.
What's your name on Bandcamp then?
Kalita Sari.
Finally, what is the number one reason people really should listen to your music? Because it's being described as a very powerful track by Phoenix Radio host Nikki New. While it speaks to lived experiences around disability, the motion and message reaches much further. Anyone navigating personal challenges, uncertainty, or the weight of what's happening in the world right now could generally connect with it. That kind of universality is really special. But in from the artist's perspective, what is the best reason people should listen to your music?
I think for a unique perspective, there's not many disabled singers and songwriters out there, particularly using the disability as a platform for advocacy. So I really hope that the whole disabled community can hopefully be able to relate to my music, but also I try and make my songs kind of universally accessible. I mean, as long as you've got a good hook, hopefully you'll reel people in. So I hope that people can also learn a bit more about what living with disability is like through my songs and my experiences, which in itself is a form of advocacy. I really hope that it does open up more conversations about disability and about the ableist world we live in. That's really all I'm trying to achieve, is make isolated people feel less isolated and feel seen and heard. But also for the wider world to understand how, you know, we need to change a lot of systems. And, if we don't want to mention the dirty NDIS word, but that, you know, the reforms there are quite challenging and troubling for the disabled community. So I'm hoping it's kind of a timely way of opening up more conversations and, getting the wider world to understand what we're going through and that we need support.
Thank you very much for your time, Gladia, for coming onto the Boldness. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been speaking with Khalid Sari about her new album, Songs for the Invisible. And if you don't think the revolution has started, you've been listening to the wrong station. Make sure you tune in and support the Boldness on June the 17th by ringing 0394193877 and donating to Radiothon. And let's finish with a song from Khalid Sari, I Survived. Thank you for joining us.